Welcome to the CFO Show. I'm your host, Melissa Howitson, CFO of Enna. In this episode, we are continuing our Better Business Partner series. Today, we're talking about the intricacies of the relationship between the CFO and CEO. My partnership with our CEO at Enna is pivotal to the work that I do. With that said, I couldn't be more excited to introduce Hunter Madeley, CEO at Enna, as our guest today. Hunter, thanks so much for joining me.
Yeah, happy to be here. This is awesome. I can't believe how well the show is going so far and how many episodes you've already done. And also that you took, I don't know, 40 or 50 episodes before inviting me. So thank you.
Well, we just had to warm up and make sure we were really polished here.
No, happy to be here.
So let's start with you telling us a bit about what does a typical day look like in the life of being a CEO of Enna?
I would say it's not typical. The fun, I think, of the role, what I expected stepping into this role and what I've found is that there is a very interesting and unique problem set. I don't say it changes every day, but it changes often and there are net new opportunities and net new problems to solve all the time. So I spend a lot of time with my senior leadership team thinking about the future, thinking about where we're going, but also thinking about what's happening today and where we can be better as a team. And so it's fun. It's interesting. Like I say, the problem set is varied. I think the opportunity for us as a team to have real impact in the market is what drives us. But to have impact and to scale and to do right by customers and the culture, it is it's a complex system and a complex puzzle. And because of that, there's no obvious or easy answer all the time. And so the fun is in the discussion, the debate, and ideally building alignment against what we think is the best path forward, leaving room to expect that we might get it wrong sometimes. We have to adjust. And that's the fun of it, in fact, working with the team to find the best path forward.
So if you had to give an elevator pitch of what the role of a CEO is, what would you say?
So I would say I'm still figuring it out. I've talked to a lot of great leaders. I've talked to a bunch of CEOs in tech and outside of tech. And I'm starting to kind of build a point of view. I do think the role changes by stage and by challenge. I do think in a kind of maybe silly way, the E in CEO does shift a lot of times. Sometimes I think it's about execution and that, you know, a CEO's role is really to make sure the engine is running well, especially if it's starting to see friction or there starts to be challenge in how the operation's running. I think sometimes it's about engagement. So the E is for engagement. Like, how do you engage with market, with your customers, and how is that developing over time? Is it on the right trajectory? Are we creating the right value? Sometimes it's efficiency. Over the last few years, we've all been thinking about how we can continue to support customers, but do it more efficiently over time. And sometimes you have to really push on that. There's a kind of word that always comes to mind for me is kind of also another E is emphasis, is like, how do I emphasize what's important? How do I continue to kind of get that message right and make sure the culture and the company is heading in the right direction? So all those things are possible and it shifts all the time. But I really do think if I synthesize it down to a single objective, as I see it, and I think others see it this way as well, but I've gleaned that my role, and I think by extension, my leadership team's role, is all about potential, right? Our goal is to unlock, assess, uncover, and amplify potential. And you think about that as potential of our company to do great work on behalf of our customers. So the potential in that relationship we're developing with the customers and how we're maximizing the value we create for them. The potential we all see in the market opportunity and how we want to allocate resources and align and go after that. And I'd say, and probably most importantly, the potential the CEO sees and the leadership team sees in the culture they're trying to build and they're trying to support and amplify against that market opportunity. And great cultures always figure out a way to drive resilience, to be innovative, to withstand the inevitable pressures you're going to feel when you're trying to build a company and trying to create value in market. And the way we all collectively kind of, like I say, assess and unlock that potential, and ideally the CEO amplifies that potential, I think if you get that right, then you've got a great leadership team. And ideally, the CEO is doing a good job to help others see the potential and get them excited to go after that. Again, whether that's market, a customer value potential, or cultural potential, all of it's about unlocking and amplifying that potential, I think.
I love how you have those different ideas for the E in CEO. Yeah, yeah. So that's great. So as CEO, you have a really broad set of responsibilities you see across the various parts of the organization. And we've had different C-suite execs on to talk about how finance can better partner with them. From your viewpoint, how do you see that partnership between finance and the other parts of the org? And are there particular areas where you think it's more important than others?
I think the finance function has a couple key roles in supporting other functions, but also in supporting the company. And I think you're at, you know, all teams are at various stages of their path to kind of mastery of this. But I really do think that there's obviously this kind of operational responsibility that the finance team has to kind of manage capital and how we think about allocating like best use resources. So where do we want to go as a company? And then how do we align that against a finance team's and finance and operations team's perspective of best use against the opportunity? And that's taking into account current state, but also expected trajectory and where cash position is, where resourcing falls aligned to that. And so when I think about that as the higher order function, then the individual team alignment, the way finance supports each team, I think they have two roles. One is to keep people focused, make sure they understand where they are on that path and on the plan that we've built, financial and operational, but then also to inspire functional leaders to think differently, to actually challenge a little bit of the way they're running their businesses. And I do think finance and ops teams in particular have a unique vantage point that allows them to be close enough to understand what we're trying to achieve, but far enough away that they can see the broader dynamics at play in any function or any system. And a great finance partnership is one where that finance leader against that function has both the insight and the courage to challenge the way things are being done, but do it in a way that really feels like we're in it together. It's mm-hmm. not an inspection and a gotcha process, but it's like, we are in this together. We're trying to collaborate around the, again, best use of our resources against the objective. And the finance team is always uniquely positioned to help us see that more clearly.
Yeah, I think we take that for granted sometimes being in finance because we have access to so much information across the business. We see things and not everybody can see all of it. And it is our job to shine the light and help. Hey, here's what I see. And sometimes what I find is, hey, I'm seeing this. It doesn't match what we're doing. Help me see what you see.
Totally.
Because you're the expert of yeah. your area so that together we can agree or disagree if this is the right way to go or how we should think about it, have some healthy debate. But yeah, shining that light and sharing across the parts of the business. And I also think helping support in your role as the CEO where you talked about that alignment. We can also help that or hurt it in terms yep, of how we interact totally. With the teams. And so we've got to be really aware of that as we're going and make sure we're aligned with the CEO and helping support the things that need to get done and the mandate that you're trying to carry out.
Yeah. And I think, and one of the probably the most difficult roles a great finance team has is recognizing along with the senior leadership team that at points of time, you're always going to have to sub-optimize parts of the system mm-hmm. to benefit the whole. And functional leaders often get so deep in making sure they're investing and driving their results in the best possible way, they're not going to be the first ones to say, hey, actually, I think we should back off investing and resourcing here because we need more help in product, or maybe we better lean into go-to-market right now. That's really hard for a functional leader, even a senior executive, to step back and say, actually, I'm gonna actually change my investment profile. I'm gonna invest less. I'm gonna pull less resources, or I'm gonna ask for less resources in the spirit of bettering the system. That's likely not gonna happen, but the finance team allows the senior leadership team view into that. and has to partner then with the functional leaders to say, okay, I know you've still got room here, whether it be in budget or with resourcing, but as we're looking at the entire company, here's some other dynamics at play here that you might not see. And they get to share that kind of cross-functional view of how the company is working. And hopefully then it becomes a real conversation with the leader, and functional leaders then lean into what's best for the company and the customer rather than what's best for their function. That's a really hard role to play as a finance partner, because in my experience, the best finance partners I've worked with are really invested in my success as a functional leader, but then also, again, need to challenge me in action, maybe need to help me see that it would be better to push resources somewhere else, or think about the spend, think about the technology spend, think about the process improvement differently, because we're in service of the whole company, not just the function. And that's an interesting challenge for finance leaders. And you have to have data, systems, confidence, perspective, insight, all of that to really be a great partner to any function.
Well, and that's a great lead-in, because my next question is, you've had experience, here, but also lots of experience other companies that you've worked with. What have been some of the attributes of the strongest CFOs and finance teams that you've seen in your career?
The one thing that has always bubbled up, and it's easier in some companies than others, is a finance team and a CFO who really understand the value equation we're trying to create with customers against the product or service we offer. And so that deep understanding, that willingness to engage with customers, that willingness to engage with the go-to-market engine, the sales team, the marketing team, to understand how we're positioning, the willingness to engage with product, to understand how they are taking feedback from market and building product differently and evolving over time, that customer value centricity, the best finance leaders, the best CFOs I've worked with, really leaned in there, because it then gives you a bunch of credibility at the exec table, but also for your team members, it gives them credibility when they engage with functions. Because the last thing you want to do is have a relationship where the functional leaders believe the finance team is so far removed from what's actually happening in market, what's actually happening with customers, that they become, again, this kind of third-party observer of a system. And they get labeled as people who are just pushing numbers and moving metrics, rather than understanding all the dynamics at play underneath that customer value equation. So I think that's the first thing, is lean into understanding of the customer value equation. And that's obviously easier in a company like Venna, where you are our target customer and you use the product. But irrespective of what the product is, the finance team needs to understand, truly understand the customer value equation, and understand when it's broken, when there's friction in it, when it's healthy. And I think that positions really well to be a partner to all the functions. And then I think the second one is this idea of courage and collaboration. Like, it does take some courage to stand up and push back. And the context around customer gives you the right to stand up and push back. And because you're not as close and in the weeds as the functional leader is into what they're doing, it also gives you a unique vantage point. So that idea of really understanding customer value and then having courage and conviction around what you're seeing to have a dialogue and collaborate around the best path forward has been, like, when that works well, I've seen amazing partnership and amazing results.
Excellent. Yeah, I think, you're right in that we've got to be able to get in there with the business. I think about understanding the customer, but even understanding, getting some empathy around product. And it's hard to build product. Yeah. And there's a lot more that goes on there. And to understand, okay, sometimes we might need to be investing more there or less. But our why, I think if you are in the business and understanding with one another, it helps you broker those trades when you need to go back at the exec table and say, okay, here's what we see, but we know over here we need to invest more because this is part of the journey of where the company's at. When other people understand the why and the greater good, it is easier to get them to buy into the trade that needs to be made, even if it means they get a little less or have to function at a different level for a while. So
totally. And I think along that same lines is like the finance team is really uniquely positioned to be a vision. They create vision for others into the future. And we as functional leaders do get caught in today, in how we're doing today. And we might see a really interesting if you're in go-to-market, you might see a really interesting opportunity where we're getting drawn into a new market. There's lots of uptake because we haven't been there yet. So we see high growth. There's a really interesting opportunity there that will serve our needs today in the next quarter, in the next two, in the next three. But a great finance team understands and can forecast where that's going in the future and whether or not that's actually profitable, healthy business that will be of benefit to us in the long run, or actually maybe business that we can acquire really quickly and easily now, but is creating drag broadly against our strategic and operational imperative and where we're going and how we're building the company. And so that idea of kind of being future-centric as well, mm-hmm. I think the Office of Finance gets a chance to be a little more future-centric than functional leaders. So in their partnership, they get to chart the path. Hey, if we keep going this way, this is where we end up. It might look great for 6 or 12 months, but here's what it looks like in 24 or 36 months. And so how do we best optimize against that future rather than results today? And that's a really tough one as well for finance to get right, because everyone wants to succeed against their metrics that they have this year, but it can't be doing a disservice to our future. It has to be aligned to what's still healthy as we see it 2-3 years out. And that's I think, a finance team's job as well, is to help us see the future.
Well, we talk so much about that in terms of Office of Finance needs to lean more into the strategy, thinking about that future. To do that, you've got to get your house in order. You've got to have things running well and freeing up your own team's time so that they can also be helping to think about the insights and the business decisions, not the mundane stuff that can drag ourselves down. And totally. We ourselves get in our own world of just, I've got to get this, I got to get this report. And we forget that bigger, more impactful role that we play within the business. So,
yeah.
So key to keep it front and center.
And I think that like the idea that we in part are here to elevate the Office of Finance, elevate the CFO to do meaningful, impactful work does actually start with operational and financial rigor. Like you've really got to build systems and automation and the skill set within your teams to deliver what's expected, you know, more quickly, more efficiently over time, and in ways that will generate more insight over time. So you're leveraging data more effectively. And then we get to talk about how then we apply real strategic value as an Office of Finance. And in part, I get excited when I talk to our customers and I talk to CFOs and I talk to FP&A leaders and operations leaders. In part, I get really excited because of the language they're using about wanting to have more strategic impact, wanting to have access to more data, not just financial, but operational data. So in part, I'm really excited because I think we can help with that, but it can never be ahead of the curve. It can never be at the expense of operational and financial rigor. So getting the core deliverables of that finance team, like running really well, really efficiently to then allow for a broader set of values they can create for the business, to me is kind of like step one and step two. And getting both right are important, but getting step one locked down and then leaning into how greater connection with data, operational process, with functions, allow you to have greater strategic impact against company goals. That's kind of the number two. And making sure you get both right is important, but one comes first. And so as I think about what we do here and what technology, the value technology can play is locking down number one and then helping you lean into insight generation, strategic value as number two. And that's kind of the exciting part of what we do. And I think if we get it right, we really do help our customers run better businesses and, you know, like say plan and grow more effectively.
What are some of the pitfalls you've seen CFOs fall into that you may have experienced in the past that we should be trying to avoid?
I think that idea of investing against strategic priorities and investing against horizons is really an interesting dialogue. And it obviously shifts whether a company's in survival mode or, you know, status quo mode for a while as they work on efficiency or they're still in growth mode. But where I've seen it cause friction in the past is where finance teams lean in to the near to mid. So I talked about the opportunity and responsibility to be future focused. When finance teams are too narrowly focused on the plan we've built this year and the need to execute against that plan, and whether it be managing against cash dynamics or managing against go-to-market dynamics, the levers they're trying to pull are about hitting the number this year, this quarter. and not doing the work of understanding impact next year and the following year, not being okay with actually dampening expectations, softening expectations in a particular year as data becomes available and setting yourselves up for better growth in future years, then there can be a problem. And I do think that idea of, let's use it as a growth company as an example, growing at 15%, at some point in time, you may decide that growing at 10% so that you can grow 15 and 20 in the future years is better than a sure path to 15 or 17% growth this year. Finance teams would get narrowly focused on achieving in quarter in fiscal results, I think have done a disservice to the company. I've seen that happen in the past. And the flip side is finance teams looking at the future, but also looking at the dynamics of the business and pointing out that certain market segments, like say, may be less profitable, less interesting. Maybe we haven't quite got the customer dynamic, customer acquisition dynamics right. It's really expensive to get into this market. And even though it's drawing us and we see big opportunity, it's a much more expensive market to get into. And so having those real strong conversations with leaders about why we have to back off one part of a business that seems to be growing and lean into another part that could be more profitable, but maybe a tougher path to growth, but in the end, a better path. So that dynamic of not being so focused on current results that you miss the opportunity to plan for the future, and then helping a company understand where the best customers are and how we can best maximize, again, that potential and opportunity.
The CFO Show is brought to you by Vena, the only complete planning platform natively integrated with Microsoft 365. With Vena, your finance and operations team can maximize their productivity and efficiency to deliver data and insights to your whole business faster. Vena lets your team use the Microsoft apps they already know and love, like Excel and PowerPoint, while giving your business the power of scale through a robust centralized database and AI capabilities. Learn more at venasolutions.com.
And then helping a company understand where the best customers are and how we can best maximize, again, that potential and opportunity.
Definitely something, it's really easy to get so caught up in my plan, almost like it's our baby of,
totally.
This is the thing we said we were going to do, got to do it. And you're right, sometimes I think we just have to step back and look at the bigger picture. We had one guest who said, you know, sometimes we got to go look from the balcony down.
Yep.
And reflect where we are and where do we need to go. So I think that's great advice.
And your point about building the plan, like the plan does become very personal, right? When a finance team does a great job, they make the most of the data they have available. They lean into and make the most of the experience and knowledge and the skills of the teams that they work with. So they've done this great job to pull all this collaboration around data and people and knowledge and experience to build what they think at that point in time mm-hmm. is the best plan. It's really hard to step back a month later and say, well, did we really get it right? Is there room for improvement here? And holding people to that plan actually has been the mark of great finance teams in the past. Like that mm-hmm. was the thing. You had to hold people to plan. And I think we're just living in it's a more volatile time for sure. But I think the expectation for agility in decision-making, in resource allocation, in thinking about potential of markets and opportunity, the expectation is there's got to be more agility. And the best companies in the world right now both establish resilience as a core DNA, a core element of their cultural DNA. But I think almost more importantly, they've figured out how to drive agility without creating chaos. And that balance of the right level of room for improvement and evolution and change, but done well, communicated well, supported with data to drive agility and change effectively is a real mark of amazing finance organizations today. And it's not easy. It's a really difficult part of the role right now. And I think every CFO is wrestling with that right now.
Well, and I think one of the ways that we can help ourselves is, like you said, that was the plan at the time that you locked it down. Things change. The one thing you know is it will not go exactly to as every assumption will not pan out exactly as you thought. These are assumptions after all. Sometimes what I find in being agile is you're tweaking dials to your point of you can't be thrashing the organization every single month, every single quarter that rip that up, we're starting over. It's often we're shifting some things or how we thought we were going to go here. We just need to start moving that. And I think if we can remind ourselves of that as well, We're just refining and tweaking. We're not saying what we did in the beginning was completely wrong and it's time to start over, because that's when I think you do get, I found the business also stops believing you if they feel that you're changing the markers frequently and they can't just go and execute on what the plan is that they think they've got and the resourcing they've got. So it is a dance in terms of finding that line and making the business feel like they can focus on executing, because they also don't want to be in, the business doesn't want to feel like it's in constant replanning mode, because we can create a lot of jag and churn on the business doing that.
Yes. And the balance against, I think, what was a very common practice, which was a bit of a use it or you lose it approach to managing a budget, conflicts with being agile and not necessarily spending until you know it's the right way to spend. And I remember early in my career at a relatively important SaaS company, even at the time, and we were in high growth mode, and a senior kind of a email went out through senior leadership distribution. And basically the email from the CEO was, here's where all of the key functions are supposed to be from a headcount perspective. Here's where you are. Anyone below expected headcount in, and I think he said a window of like 30 to 60 days. If 30 to 60 days, you haven't closed the gap. So this is a company in growth mode, so you need to hire great people. If you haven't closed the gap, the expectations of what you need to deliver are not going to change, but your headcount is going to be allocated to someone else who is staying ahead of their resourcing plan. So it created this real sense of urgency that you've got budget, you've got headcount, you better spend it. And while that, you know, it was probably the right tone to set at that time for that company at the stage they were, I would say it's just fundamentally different today, that if you build an engine where everyone is trying to maximize spend it or they, you know, lose it mentality across your business, you're doing yourself, and in fact, you know, the company and the customers, a real disservice, because you want a senior leadership team thinking about, is this best use? If it was allocated for A, is maybe B a better way to spend today, even within function, given what we're finding and where the data is pointing us. And then at a senior level, the CFO, the finance team, the exec team, it can actually think about, is spending A or B in that function right? Or is actually spending in a different function more effective as we have, you know, budget available, additional resourcing available? And that's the dynamic that I think the healthiest companies today are managing really well. And it creates a culture of agility and a culture of strategic alignment, a culture of customer value alignment, and moves away from this idea that if I've been given it, I better spend it or I'm going to lose it. And I think that's it's an important evolution, important change. I think it's actually good for company culture. I think it's good for customer in the long run.
I think the underpinning of that is trust. I think the CEO and the CFO have to create a culture that people trust, that, okay, I didn't spend it. I may lose it now because there's a more important place. I will sometimes feel like I'm the winner and sometimes the loser. But at the end of the day, it's going to work out the way it should as a business. And so these things, they do come around. Because if you don't have that trust, that's when it gets really hard for people. You know, I've seen that before where people, you're doing the budgeting and they're padding the budget because of the contingency. And too much contingency throughout a plan is missed opportunity.
When you think about that role of kind of CFO as almost like a chief trust builder, you've got to build trust within the culture across the executive leadership team that we will do right. We'll do right by the customer. We'll do right by the culture and the mission. And so don't hang on to your purse strings so tight. Anything you've seen work really well in that environment, or how you've created that over time?
Well, I think, you know, the business partnership that you've created through your team in terms of the partners that the business has, I certainly, you know, I've lived experiences where there was a number, it changed, you know, some of the bigger costs and you were seeing something that was looking a little alarming and gone and hit the panic button, hit it too prematurely, you know, by say going to the CEO before going to your operations person. That can break trust really quickly in terms of people not bringing you in on the conversation. And if you break it, it's hard to build it back. And so I certainly like to operate with no surprises. throughout, you know, if we're about to go and present financials to the whole team, but there's somebody there whose area is going to get a spotlight,
yeah,
they should know before they're caught off guard in that room. So I try through the relationship building that we do every day in the work we're doing constantly to make sure we build that. Recognize when you've goofed, you know, the situation where we had something and I'd taken it to the CEO and I didn't realize the COO didn't know, you know, I had enough trust with that individual that they just called me and said, like, that wasn't cool. I didn't like that. Can we agree? We're not going to do. And like, so you create that and you have to be open to that feedback and go, all right, next time around, how are we going to do these things? I think also just explaining that why, you know, when you take the time, it's so quick, we're moving fast, you don't communicate. Taking the time to help people understand why this is the better trade. We need to do this.
Yep.
There's smart people in the business that everyone comes here trying to build a great company. They'll get on board if you just help them get there. So
yep. I think the point you made there that is not, it should be inherent to every finance team, but maybe they're not, maybe the brand of a finance or a team and a CFO is not this, but this idea of kind of curiosity and understanding, like in really trying to understand what's happening rather than like say, kind of judge them, like sitting back, looking at the numbers and think that because you've seen the numbers and see how it's playing out, that you know what's happening. I think that's when that mistrust comes where someone's sitting, feels like someone's sitting above, looking down and judging rather than seeing patterns and trends and being curious then and engaging and making it a two-way dialogue. And I know your team does that particularly well. So yeah, I think it's a big element of trust for sure.
And respecting that they're the expert. I'm not the expert at HR, at marketing. I see some things, but it's a collaboration that you've got to have there. So Hunter, you talked about horizons and the importance of being future-looking while also focusing on the current. How do you think about the near-term, medium-term, and long-term investments?
So again, it kind of depends on stage of the company, market opportunity, market share, all of those things. But I do think you're doing yourself and your customers a disservice if you aren't purposely thinking about horizons of investment. And obviously there's the majority of what you're doing is about serving your current markets and current customers with current solutions is the way we typically think about horizon one or the near term. And you can't stop investing in that. And that's obviously an important part of how you're going to drive revenue and create impact in market today. Then I think about the kind of ancillary value. It's kind of feeling like tuck-in value, the really natural extension of things that you're already doing with the same decision makers, typically kind of in the same domain, but there are additional services, products, offerings that you think you can build and create some value and create some momentum around. That's a natural extension of what you do. And, you know, that to me is like the decision about how big the market opportunity remains against your core and how quickly you want to think about expansion opportunities to the kind of same buyer. The way you think about, you know, balancing the investment there depends a lot on where you are. But let's say you decide 80% is going to be against your core because there's still big market opportunity. You still think you can grow it. You do know there's expanded opportunity within the same buyer, right? You're selling similar value proposition with expanded value into that same buyer. And let's say you've carved out 15% of your investment. So that's product investments, that's go-to-market and marketing investments. So all the things you're doing to support that. And that one day might end up becoming more and more part of your revenue. You might move from a, you know, new customer acquisition motion to a more predominantly customer base sales motion where there's lots of value to sell back into a big customer base. So that's important to understand where that next lever of value is coming. And then you think about, you know, how you're almost view it as in the traditional way of thinking, especially in tech, this idea of how you're going to disrupt yourselves or how you're going to disrupt a new part of the market that is in line with your overall mission and the value you're trying to create in market. So you're not going to you know, build tangentially value in a market you know nothing about. So it's going to be aligned to your company mission and how you create value for customers. But it should be something so interesting and net new that you don't know for certain it's going to pay off, but you've carved out time and energy to explore that. You've given people room to innovate and test. And then how you decide what those that distribution looks like and what stage you're at is up to you. But the push is just be purposeful about it. And then once you're purposeful about it, be courageous, because there will be times where you're going to want to pull investment away from Horizon 2 and Horizon 3 because you think Horizon 1 is at risk. That level of kind of short-term orientation in the investment horizon says, you know, we're in it for the next year or two. We don't necessarily care about where the market of the company is going or the people in our culture, where what they're going to be doing in 2, 3, 4 years. And that is harmful and is typically why, you know, many, especially in tech that moves so fast, why many companies fail. And so that idea of, you know, being really, really deliberate about holding on to the investment thesis, testing against that over time, but being really purposeful and deliberate that you are building a company for the future, and therefore you need investment, an investment thesis around multiple horizons. We use three, but it's more important to be purposeful and then diligent against those investment horizons to secure the future of the company, to secure the value you're creating for your culture and the value you're creating for customers.
Well, and it's interesting because that is another reason why, as finance, we have to be so in tune with the strategy and where we're going, because we sometimes can become part of the problem when we focus so much on the current term and why are we doing that, especially because those Horizon 3 bets, they are bets without this ROI that we can take to the bank and count on. And they do become easy ones to start targeting totally. when you're looking to balance things. So
yeah. And it's a really natural pull. The answer is, if you weren't spending 20% outside of Horizon 1, you can probably grow your core market faster than you're growing it now, right? So it looks good. Like, well, why are we spending over here that is not guaranteed growth, that we don't see where it's going to go yet, where if we spend another dollar here, we with certainty can grow faster and get return. And that dialogue it's a healthy one. You have to have it. But again, I would push in our point of view, I think many is that you have to be thinking multiple horizons, and you have to be diligent about and purposeful about how you invest.
So last question for you. What are some of the top challenges facing CEOs today? What's top of mind for you?
I think not just for CEOs, but for companies and for exec teams, market dynamics are shifting more quickly than ever. It almost sounds cliche to say it now, but it's still showing up as a real driver of change. We're just becoming more and more globally connected. So global markets are becoming more accessible. And there is some overarching economic conditions right now that have us still sitting in this place of uncertainty. So you're operating from uncertainty with a big global markets that you can serve. And the expectation of customers that you're going to serve them well, you're going to use the latest technology to do it, you're going to focus on value you're creating for them, that you're going to have an honest and genuine relationship that, by the way, is going to be shared, you know, publicly if it doesn't go well, right? So you've got a lot of exposure on the quality of relationships you're creating. And so when you think about the leadership team and the CEO's role right now, it's to, you know, best manage and be stewards for customer value. It's to best manage and be stewards for automation technology that can help create that customer value, and to think both about efficiency and growth and get the balance right for where you are in your market and your point of time and your maturity as a company. So the problem set's really, really interesting now. And a lot of it, like I say, is driven by still uncertain economic conditions, but a more connected and larger and more global marketplace, which is really exciting when you want to try to grow a business. And finally, and perhaps most importantly, this responsibility to our culture. Collectively, we're trying to build great work cultures. We operate in communities that are changing, cultural dynamics are changing. I think within work, though, the idea that we want to build cultures where folks feel they're part of high-performance teams doing great work, but in supportive, collaborative environments where they're learning and growing. And everyone is thinking about the value they create, the way they are of service to others, whether that be the customer, whether that be their teammates, through the lens of mastery. How do I get great at what I do so I can be of service and be of help to the company, to the mission we're on, and to the customers? And so I think every CEO, every senior leadership team has to think, you know, really meaningfully about that idea of path to mastery and how does our culture celebrate and reward both doing great work and supporting others in their pursuit of doing great work. And if you can get that right, you've got everyone in your company trying to learn and grow and be better at what they can do, and they all are aligned against the mission and are all applying their effort in the service of the customer, in the service of the opportunity, in the service of the potential of the company, then you've got something special. And so it's incumbent upon all of us as leaders and CEOs to lean in there and try to create an environment where that type of culture can thrive.
Couldn't agree more. And I know certainly, because I get to the pleasure of working with you, I know always that's top of mind for you as leader at Venna. So thank you so much for joining me today. Great insights as always. Before we let you go, we usually have two rapid fire questions that we like to ask our guests. So are you ready?
Yep.
All right. First one, what is the best piece of business or leadership advice that you've received in your career?
This will sound silly, but when I was first a leader, my first time I had a chance to step into leadership, I almost got fired. I really should have. and what I was missing was focus on the development and potential of others first. And your development and potential as a leader will get amplified. And that's like, it took me, I think it was 6 or 12 months of really not being a great leader, worrying more about the system and worrying more about whether the team was doing the right stuff and never really asking myself, what can I do to help this person be better at what they do? And if I'm not the right person to help them because they're already deeper in the domain and they do the job better than I, what are the resources I can call upon to help them be better? So my orientation as a leader early on was more system rather than simply helping others be better. Once my VP basically said, hey, you're either fired or you're going to get good at this. And I said, I choose to get good at this. How can I become better? And lean into coaching and focus on others. And for me, that's the best leaders I've ever worked with. It is genuine and I can sense that they care about my progress and that they're courageous enough to challenge me when I'm not doing things as well as I could. So that was the best piece of advice I think I've gotten and tend to try to live by that today still.
Sometimes it's those awkward moments or those they hit you out of the blue that are that they stick in your head for sure.
Yeah.
What is the most impactful book that you've ever read?
There's one called First Break All the Rules. There's a new edition of that. And the reason I like it is I was always a little bit of a data geek. So I read leadership books and I read, you know, broadly operational books, how to build a better engine, how to build better teams. But when I read this one, it was less about someone's perspective or theory supported by 20 interviews with CEOs. And it was actually data-centric. It's 20,000 plus interviews. It's a bunch of data, data centricity and a bunch of regression analysis to show what types of behaviors typically and supported by regression analysis create the best environments and the most productive teams. So that's called First Break All the Rules. And the reason it's the title, as you'd expect, is a lot of the stuff we think is good leadership is actually counterproductive to building great teams. And so there's a lot of counterintuitive behavior in there that actually helps to drive great performance. So I love that book, stuck with me from early on. And then Liz Wiseman wrote a book called Multipliers, which just aligned to my values is that no one is neutral in any environment, right? You're either having positive or negative impact in your environment, on the people around you, on the system you're working within. And so Multipliers is a really good exploration of how we all can show up better to help systems work better, to help teams work better, to help a partner work better. So the idea that we can all choose to multiply our potential through the behaviors and our purposeful action, or we can be diminishers. And you get to kind of learn how to be great at that. And collectively, again, if cultures can learn how to be broadly multipliers at the individual level and then multipliers at the team level, you got a chance to build something pretty special. And I think she captured a bunch of that really well.
It was a great book. And I remember after, it makes me pause sometimes and go, okay, that interaction, that meeting.
Yeah.
Was I just a multiplier there or a diminisher?
Yeah, totally. It's
like, you want to be a multiplier, yeah. But sometimes after the fact you go, I actually did not help the cause there.
Totally. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Hunter. Really appreciate you being here.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks.
If you'd like to learn more about today's topic, please visit the links in the show notes. Looking for more great CFO Show content? Sign up for our free newsletter. Each week, you'll get a roundup of exclusive content to help you grow and drive strategic transformation. Visit thecfoshowpodcast.com to sign up now. For the CFO Show, I'm Melissa Howitson. Until next time.